Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. A new $37 million wildlife crossing is being planned for the I-5 corridor near the Oregon-California border. Research from Southern Oregon University was a key component in the feasibility study that led to identifying the location for a new overpass for wildlife to safely cross the busy freeway. About 6,000 collisions between vehicles and wildlife are reported each year throughout Oregon. The average cost of damages in a deer collision is $9,000, and it's $24,000 for each collision with an elk, according to the Oregon Department of Transportation. ODOT announced $33.2 million in federal funding that will support the project, while ODOT has committed another $3.8 million for a total of $37 million. Construction is set to start in 3 years. Joining the exchange to tell us more are three guests. Joining me in the studio are Dr. Karen Mocker. She is an associate professor of environmental science, policy, sustainability, and biology at Southern Oregon University. Welcome, Professor.
Thank you.
Dr. Jack Williams is a co-coordinator at the Southern Oregon Wildlife Crossing Coalition. Welcome, Jack.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And joining by phone is Oregon State Representative Pam Marsh. Welcome, Representative Marsh.
Good morning.
Listeners can join the conversation by email at jx@jeffnet.org. Professor, let's start with you. You and your students have been studying the wildlife habitat in this region for a number of years. What'd you learn?
Well, it's been really exciting to study wildlife along the highway, believe it or not, because I-5 south of Ashland traverses such a diverse and special landscape. So if you look at an elevation map of the West Coast, you can see this really unique east-west mountain range connecting the coast mountains to the interior mountains right here in our backyard. And that creates a whole lot of different habitats. And our research with students has documented the full diversity of medium and large mammal species that you might expect in our environment, conducting their lives along the highway. We've seen bobcats hunting mice. We've seen mountain lions feeding on kills. And we've seen, unfortunately, animals behaving really tentatively as they think about potentially crossing the highway. So we really see a lot of evidence that wildlife are living in this landscape and trying to coexist with I-5.
Okay. Well, I know that area down by, I think it's the Siskiyou Pass, right?
Yes, yeah. So the Siskiyou Pass is the highest elevation location on all of I-5 between Canada and Mexico. And the site of this proposed wildlife crossing will just be a couple miles south of that.
That's pretty busy.
It's very busy.
So, Jack, $37 million is a lot of money to give wildlife an overpass over the I-5. How do we know it's going to work?
Well, we know that wildlife crossings in general tend to be fairly effective. If you've got fencing to help funnel the animals towards the crossings, we typically see 80 to 90% reduction in wildlife vehicle collisions. But having said that, it's also a little bit of a learning process. And that's, I think, why one of the important things about having Karen Mauger and her students working on this at the same time is we need to learn really how to do this and how to do it well. We don't have a lot of wildlife crossings in Oregon and really across the West compared to probably what we should have. So we're early in that phase, so it is a little bit of a learning process. But one of the things we want to do is have a wildlife crossing that works for a wide variety of species. So it's a large crossing. It's 200 feet wide, 800 feet long. And it will be planted with a variety of native vegetation as well as native structure like logs and boulders, rocks, these kinds of things, as well as some open areas. So we're trying to appeal to a lot of different species in how this will be constructed.
200 feet wide, 800 feet long.
Yes.
How did they come up with that? Those dimensions?
Oh, well, it essentially the location, as Karen mentioned, is about 2 miles north of the California border, and there's a cut in I-5, and that's just the distance, 800 feet, to roughly bridge that gap, if you will. And recall that in that part of I-5, there is a pretty substantial median as well. So it's just a long way across that across that highway. And then the 200-foot width, I think, again, we wanted to be able to support a variety of habitats and appeal to a variety of species. And it takes about that width to be able to do that.
Gotcha. Representative Marsh, what do you see as the economic benefits of this project, as in fewer vehicle crashes, fewer first responder calls, fewer health impacts? What's the economics of it?
Well, I think you just started to name it right there. We know that there are an average of about 7,000 wildlife vehicle collisions in Oregon every single year. We know that on average, 4 people die in those wrecks. And we also know that wildlife and our environment is an asset in attracting people to come and visit. I think one of the really best parts of this project is the wide variety of support that it's engendered. I remember the very first tour that I got to take with a bunch of crazy biologists up to look at possible sightings for a crossing. And the partners from the very beginning included Oregon Hunters Association, ODOT, you know, the biologists, Southern Oregon University. The data really shows that upwards of 90% of Oregonians support the development of crossings. So working on this has just been a real delight, because it's quite wonderful to see something that will do well for our wildlife be so broadly supported.
Are you aware of other university studies in other parts of the state that are comparable to what SLU is doing?
Well, SLU really got involved in a hands-on way on this particular crossing. From the very beginning, put students up there to try to calculate the kind of critters that exist and help us look at the likelihood that a crossing would be beneficial. I think that's generally probably the way most universities get involved, is when students have the opportunity to actually go out and work on the land with specific crossings. This is going to be, no question, the biggest crossing of its kind anywhere around, and the only crossing on the I-5 corridor from in its whole expanse of the West Coast.
When you say the biggest crossing of its kind anywhere around, are we talking just the western region of the United States, or are we talking about the whole country?
Well, I suspect across the country, although I'll defer to my colleagues here on the interview, because they may know more. But we know that there's nothing on I-5. We have some other crossings on, I believe, 97 in Oregon that have really helped to reduce deer collisions by, the data shows, 90%. But we haven't had, I don't think we have an overcrossing like this virtually anyplace else from a long distance. The 97 crossing is an underpass, which is good too, but an overpass is what's going to work on an I-5 kind of location like this one.
My guests are Dr. Karen Mauger, an associate professor at SLU, Dr. Jack Williams, co-coordinator at the Southern Oregon Wildlife Crossing Coalition, and Oregon State Representative Pam Marsh. We're talking about a new $37 million wildlife crossing being planned for the I-5 corridor near the Oregon-California border. Now, Representative Marsh said this is going to be a pretty big project. How big, Jack?
So it is big. As Pam mentioned, the only overcrossing over I-5 between Canada and Mexico. So that's pretty substantial. Your listeners may be familiar with the Wallace-Annenberg project down in Southern California. It's over the 101 freeway. It has a lot of kind of mountain lion issues involved, and that's a monster of a project, bigger than ours. But this is definitely substantial.
Yeah. Are you talking about something that already exists or something that's being planned?
Something that's under construction.
It's under construction.
Under construction right now.
And
yeah.
It's bigger than ours.
It will be a little bigger than ours. Yeah, that's, you know, the 101 freeway down there, I think it's 5 lanes of traffic each direction. And then it also has a big access road that it goes over. So it's a monster there.
Well, okay. So in my imagination, I see a bear and a deer arriving at a wildlife crossing at the same time. Who wins?
That's a good question. Hopefully they both do. You know, that's one of the reasons that you've got something that's 200 feet wide. You've got probably some improvements to the approach habitats, the areas just on either side of the wildlife bridge. And you've got areas where they're open so that animals like deer and elk probably feel very good about crossing. And you've got areas that with some vegetation, with some structure, some big boulders or logs that other animals that want to be a little bit more secretive and not be out in the open can cross. Bears probably can go either way. I think they're pretty pretty easygoing on that side. But yeah, we want something that all species are going to win.
Okay, so it gives them an opportunity for a sort of a hide-and-seek game as they're crossing without predators and prey coming together.
I think that, as Jack says, the habitats are going to be comfortable for all species. So you will have species that might want to hide on the crossing, and they'll have that kind of cover to hide. You might have predators that want to hide on the crossing, and they'll have some cover for that too. So I wouldn't rule out the possibility of some predators and their prey coming into contact on the bridge. But that's going to happen anyway in the habitats in the area. And what's really special about this is that the species are actually going to be able to cross the highway in this situation.
Well, you just made my mind go into imagination mode again. So now, predators can stake out the crossing, knowing that, you know, given patterns of animals, and animals get, you know, they're smart.
Sure.
They get to learn the habitats or the habits of other animals. And so is there a possibility that predators could stake out the crossing and lunch?
I think it's something we'll be excited to study. I mean, we're going to have ways to monitor with photo and videos what's happening on the bridge. So we'll definitely be curious to see that. But to just put that in context, you know, we have a fairly healthy deer population in this region.
See them every time I drive in.
And certainly we've got predator populations as well. But I think that the potential of this overpass to really support our predator populations in general is exciting. They require really large home ranges. They need to move a lot to find food and resources. And so this is going to enable them to do that. And while there could potentially be some predators hunting from the bridge, I don't expect it to have a massive impact on use of the bridge or on the populations. But we'll have to study it and find out.
Gotcha. Well, Professor, a lot of work went into studying the habits of wildlife in this region to help determine where this project should be located. So tell us about the process that of the study and the people that were involved.
Sure. So this all really started with Jack and Amy's leadership of the Southern Oregon Wildlife Crossing Coalition, which formed in about 2021. Mm-hmm. And some of our initial work was to just go out along the highway and think about locations along the highway where animals might already be trying to cross the road. And together with Charlie Shells, who's since retired from being an ecologist at the Cascade Siskiyou National Monument, we set up trail cameras, which your listeners might know as game cameras, remotely triggered cameras, to take pictures and videos of wildlife at these places we thought might be trying to cross. And that all fed into this kind of feasibility study to decide what were some promising locations to build the wildlife crossing. One of the things that we observed, for example, was that we saw a whole lot more diversity on the south slope, closer to California, of the Siskiyou Summit than on the north slope. And so that's, for example, one of the factors that went into choosing this particular location for a crossing.
Okay. So how many of the students were involved in this?
Good question. I think to date we've had 14 research assistants over the past 3 years, which is pretty incredible. So SOU, Environmental Science Policy and Sustainability, has a student capstone program where students really take ownership of their research, and we've had 3 different capstone groups. I've also been able to hire a few interns, and these students get experience going out in the field, learning how to collect data from these cameras, and then they toil very hard for hours and hours to look through the over 1 million photos and videos that we've captured so far.
Wait a minute. Did you say 1 million?
Yes, I said 1 million.
Over what period of time?
Over the past 3 years. And those 1 million photos and videos started to get pretty overwhelming, and that's where some of the interdisciplinary collaboration at SOU has been really exciting. We were able to partner up with the computer science department and an assistant professor there, Dr. Bosco, and some of her students to use AI models. And we ran those million photos through AI, and it would draw a box around any animal in a picture. So we could ignore the 95% of pictures without an animal and just focus on the ones that had one.
Fantastic. We're going to talk more about that AI technology involved after we take this short break. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guests are Dr. Karen Mauger, an associate professor at SOU, Dr. Jack Williams, coordinator at the Southern Oregon Wildlife Crossing Coalition, and Oregon State Representative Pam Marsh. We're talking about a new $37 million wildlife crossing being planned for the I-5 corridor near the Oregon-California border. Just before the break, Professor was telling us about the work that has gone into the research and how a million photos were poured through using AI.
Yeah, so one of the biggest advances in my field, wildlife ecology, in recent years has been this use of AI to sort through big data sets. The tool we use isn't like many of you probably think about AI. It's not ChatGPT where you ask a question. Instead, in this case, the artificial intelligence is this model that knows how to differentiate an animal from something else in the environment. So you can show this AI millions of photos, and it will pick out what it thinks is an animal. And that helps us immensely because then we can just focus on the images that we think have an animal in them. AI is a little controversial because of the potential sustainability implications. It uses a lot of energy. So one of the really exciting things we've been able to do with our partners in computer science is actually run the model on a computer with an energy monitor to look at how much energy it's using and think about what might be needed to offset it. And we're going to be presenting those results in a few months.
That's a great use of technology. Representative Marsh, given that I-5 is a major transportation artery running up and down the entire state, are there plans for more wildlife crossings over the freeway?
I think there is tremendous interest in whether or not and what locations would sustain and really deserve a crossing. We started this work in the legislature in 2019 with the passage of a bill by my colleague, Representative Helm, who is still here and doing this work, that gave ODFW and ODOT, Department of Transportation, a directive to establish a wildlife corridor action plan. And we just kept working on this over time. We've allocated a couple of years ago about $7 million for this work. And that will support the matching grant that is required for the Siskiyou project in order to get our federal money. We have more legislation lined up this year, and I'm helping to sponsor it, that will just continue to chip away at figuring out how to get these projects on the ground. We know there's a lot of federal money that's been out there and available. We want to make sure that the state is in as good a place as possible to compete for that. So we're on the ground trying to identify future locations and to make sure that the state is doing everything we can to put ourselves in a favorable position to get funding.
Did some of this money come from the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022?
The $33 million? I do not think so, but I'm going to refer to colleagues on the call because they know better where that money comes from.
Sure. That comes from the Infrastructure Investment Act, Jobs Act of 2021, and yeah, this was the wildlife crossing pilot program of that subpart of that bill.
Okay, so that's you're talking about the Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. That was a subset of another act. Is that what I'm hearing?
So, maybe Representative Marsh can help me out of the entanglement of the acts, it's a federal level. But this is essentially Infrastructure Act money.
Okay.
So it's a dedicated wildlife crossing component of that, but it's really Infrastructure Act money.
Okay. Representative Marsh, given the current political climate, do you anticipate that there are any risks involved with funding?
Well, I think we will all be watching to see what the federal government does in the future, whether there are cuts to some of these programs. I think the $33 million should be secure. I'm not worried about that.
Okay. So, Jack, give us some of your background and tell us, what does your organization do?
Well, our Southern Oregon Wildlife Crossing Coalition You know, actually, this back to the Infrastructure Act early 2021. We're hearing the rumors about money coming in for this kind of work, or potentially this kind of work, and a number of us had been concerned about I-5 and what it had fragmented the habitat in the Cascade-Siskiyou and in this general Klamath Mountain region that Karen spoke about earlier. So we basically started to form this coalition, Amy Amrine and myself, and we built it to about 17 organizations, raised private money for a feasibility report that was conducted in 2022. That looked at potential wildlife crossing areas from the city of Ashland to the California border on I-5. And with the help of a lot of Karen's work, we really focused on this area just a couple miles north of the California border. It's really a high species diversity area.
My guests are Dr. Karen Mauger, an associate professor at SOU, Dr. Jack Williams, co-coordinator at the Southern Oregon Wildlife Crossing Coalition, and Oregon State Representative Pam Marsh. We're talking about a new $37 million wildlife crossing being planned for the I-5 corridor near the Oregon-California border. Now, Professor, let's take a step back and learn more about you and what you're doing here at SOU.
Sure. I teach in our Environmental Science Policy and Sustainability Department, which really tries to prepare our students, who are all undergraduates, for careers working with the very real kind of environmental and sustainability issues we face. And one of the advantages of our program is it's fairly small. We get to know our students, and we get to support a lot of them in research. And so it's been really rewarding for me to have these students repeatedly in my classes and then get to say to them, hey, do you want a research experience? And really, really give them that hands-on experience that'll prepare them for their careers.
Okay, well, I have two words for you. Climate change. How does that affect the habitat?
Absolutely. That's a really important part of this wildlife crossing project. You know, you can think about it on the level of an individual animal who just wants to cross the road, but you can also think about it on the level of the entire population of mountain lions in our area, for example. What kind of flexibility are they going to need on a landscape that's changing so rapidly? How might they respond to wildfires, to shifts in where water or prey are available? They need the ability to move, and this is going to be really important to all of these populations in this incredibly biodiverse area. And I think that's one of the really exciting things about this project in comparison to some of the others in the U.S., too. Often wildlife crossings are built because they're in the route of a specific migration, like a pronghorn migration. Ours is just being built in an area of incredible biodiversity, with the recognition that conserving that biodiversity in the future under climate change is going to require a lot of species to be able to move and adjust and adapt.
So, Jack, what is the life cycle of these wildlife crossings?
You know, they're long-term structures for sure. You know, what we hope to do is build, you know, and look at other places in this general region for additional crossing structures or undercrossings, overcrossings, even improve some of the places that are already there, like the Mount Ashland exit bridges. But the longevity of this one is a par with, you know, large bridge structures on interstate highways.
We're talking decades.
We're talking decades.
Okay.
Right.
How many of similar type crossings are there in the United States?
There are, you know, there's in the order in terms of large, substantial ones over interstate highways.
Sure.
Maybe a dozen, maybe not quite that many. Interstate 80, if you drive Eastern Nevada, you go over a couple of or under a couple of fairly large ones as you approach Utah. Interstate 90 in Washington has one. I mentioned this Wallace Annenberg project down in Southern California. There's a number of them. There are a number also of undercrossings that are often a less expensive approach if it works for the landscape. So there are a lot of places where animals cross or try to cross. And I think states are becoming much more attuned to working these into their projects. And I know that's what Oregon's trying to do with as US 97 moves forward in a divided highway south of Bend to incorporate wildlife undercrossings or some sort of wildlife passages into that road construction project. And that's the time to do it. And of course, right now we're after the fact. We do what we can do.
Well, I keep hearing these numbers like 80-90% reduction in vehicle wildlife crashes because of these underpasses and overpasses. I don't understand how animals know.
Well, I think there's a couple of answers to that, and maybe Karen can help me out too. But one thing, when we cite these projects, we try to cite them in areas where we think wildlife will cross, where there's a high number of wildlife potential using the area. And also you have to recall that most of these projects include some sort of fencing. And wildlife fencing that funnels the animals to the overcrossing in this case. So we'll have probably wildlife fencing along the a mile, mile and a half, maybe to 2 miles on each side that will help move the animals. So when we talk about reductions in wildlife vehicle collisions, we're really talking about that project area, including the fencing zone where we see those collisions. So we try to encourage animals into the areas where they'll be safe.
And to piggyback on that, we've been studying wildlife not only at this potential crossing site, but within that fencing zone. And that's one of the really exciting things. We see animals using that couple miles where the fencing is going to be put up in different ways. But we know that we're going to get a representative of all the different habitats and different species within that fencing zone and hopefully attract them towards the crossing.
So which animals will benefit the most? Who are the winners and losers here?
Well, hopefully there aren't too many losers. As I said, we've tried to, this is a high diversity area. Mm-hmm. We want to have a crossing that, frankly, supports the big animals, the deer, elk, bear, cougars, these sort of things. The smaller mammals, too, and frankly, even birds, reptiles, pollinators. I mean, there's a whole array of species that can benefit from these kind of wildlife crossings. So we're looking to run that whole range of species diversity that's there.
Okay, and how long will this project take?
The construction, actually, ODOT believes they can do it within a year. So if we have groundbreaking in late 2027, construction in 2028, we could have a finished project by the end of 2028.
Well, Representative Marsh, that's a year of construction on I-5 in one of the busiest overpasses we have. What are you expecting as far as traffic?
Well, I know that ODOT has looked carefully at that issue because we can't have major interruption of I-5. So they've planned a design and thought about a construction schedule that will enable the project to move forward without interruption of the traffic flow.
Okay. And so are you anticipating that there's going to be more money that's needed? Are there any contingencies for cost overruns?
Well, I think we have a good budget. There are some contingencies that are built into the budget. And we'll, assume and hope that prices stay relatively stable over the next couple of years. But I feel pretty confident that we are on the right path budget-wise.
Okay. So once this overpass is built, what do we hope to learn and how long will it take for us to learn it?
Good question. So we are going to continue to monitor how wildlife are using the landscape before and after construction, and that will include monitoring how wildlife are using the overpass, but also how they're using some of the areas of habitat further away from the overpass. And we're hoping to really be able to compare wildlife on the landscape before the overpass went in and after. I think it's a lot of scientists' dream to get to do a study that lasts decades, so I'm excited to do that. But it's going to take some time to get answers. Wildlife might be temporarily a little nervous about the area during construction, and it'll probably take a few years after it's built before we really have the data to understand how it's being used.
One of our listeners said he wants to make sure Boyd Peters was credited. Are there any relation to Boyd Peters as credited? They're saying they want him credited as a leader in the animal overpass program, being vital in their creation. Anyone know that name? I guess not. Okay. Well, on that note, Do we have anything we haven't covered before we get out of here?
You know, I think we are in this for the long haul. I know Representative Marsh is, and Representative Helms have been very good on long-term funding within the state of Oregon. Dr. Mauger's been looking at, you know, she's in long-term monitoring. We're in this for the long haul. So these a lot of years invested, and we got a lot of years to go.
Okay, well, we're out of time for this segment of the exchange. Thank you, Representative Marsh.
Oh, thanks for the chance to be here.
Thank you, Professor, and thank you, Jack.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My guests were Karen Mauger, an associate professor at SOU, Dr. Jack Williams, co-coordinator at the Southern Oregon Wildlife Crossing Coalition, and Oregon State Representative Pam Marsh. I'm Mike Green.